Good evening. My name is John Todman, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm an overactive social drinker and compulsive thinker. And I'm a member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think that's important to state because we have a great fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm also a member of the fellowship. But I am a member of the program. I have worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I put them into my life, and the promises that were given to me when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous have happened in my life. I have had a spiritual experience in my life which gave me a change of personality sufficient to the point that I no longer have to drink alcohol. Everybody in the world gets to do things. Remember when you went on your first date? Remember that? God, that was scary. You know, and remember your first sexual experience? You know, I mean, that was scary too. And everybody gets to come to their first AA meeting. And it's scary. And I sat in my first AA meeting when I was 29 years old. And some thoughts went through my mind. And one of the thoughts that went through my mind is, what am I going to do if I quit drinking? Well, I travel with my business. And Friday afternoon, I was in Blythe, California, as a result of my business. And I went to an AA conference, and Bob Darrell and I did a book study, which took Friday afternoon and Saturday. And then Saturday night, I went to a AA banquet and heard an AA speaker. And then Sunday morning, I drove down to Laughlin, and I went to an AA meeting, and I went to a committee meeting for the Tri-State Roundup. And tonight, I'm here speaking. And tomorrow I had off until somebody caught me at this meeting and said, I want to talk to you tomorrow. So tomorrow's booked in too. And I think it's interesting because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, nobody had talked to me for a long, long period of time. My mother had told me, don't ever come back into this house again, drunk or sober. Because she says, you're killing yourself and I can't stand to see you die. And so when I said in that first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I said, what am I going to do when I sober up? What do I do with my time? The other thing I wanted to know is I said, well, what am I going to do when my daughter gets married? And that's a good question. The only problem was my daughter was only 8 years old. I got sobered up, and I was sober probably 3 or 4 months, and I stood by a coffee pot, not too dissimilar to the one in the back of the room, and I asked a young lady to go out and have coffee with me after the meeting. Now, I had fathered 3 children. And I was 30 years old. And my knees shook so bad I had to hold on to the counter. Because I was afraid. I was as scared of her. I knew she knew what I was thinking. And what I was thinking was terrible. And I asked her, you know, and I don't know exactly what the words were, but God, I remember my mouth was so dry that I couldn't swallow. And I'm holding on to this thing, and I'm shaking. And I wanted to know if she wanted to go down and have a cup of coffee. And I find that's interesting because I said the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I ever attended, I was living at home with my mother at the time, as most good alcoholic men do. And my mother had a elastic umbilical cord, and she'd snap it, and I'd come flying back home. And we would sit there and talk about her, and my mother would say, well, you know, she really wasn't the one that you should have married. Let me take care of you, son. And I'm living in the room that I grew up in, and I've got a bottle of wine stuck underneath my mattress that I have to replenish every day just so I can make it through the night. And I go to this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and my mother said, did you go to an AA meeting? And I said, yes, I did. And she said, what do you think? And I said, well, I may be a drunk, but I'm not crazy. Those people are crazy. And I found it interesting that a man that didn't think he was crazy was standing at a coffee pot, terrified, just asking somebody to go down and have some coffee with him. Now, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew what my problem was. And my problem is that life had broken my heart. And the only thing that ever gave me any peace was alcohol and drugs. I fell in love with this girl. No, that's not true. I was sitting in a bar, and this girl came into a bar, and I looked at my buddy, and I said, I'll bet you $100 I can bet her down in a month. And he said, fine. And so I fell in love with the idea of my own publicity, and in about 2 weeks, I'm living with her. And she thought that there was a possibility that I may drink too much. And so she took me down to a priest, and the priest said, I'll talk to you, but you're going to have to come back tomorrow night, and you're going to have to not drink, and you're going to have to tell me the truth. If you can't be honest with me, don't come back. Well, they say we're not honest people. We are. I was honest. I went back to the priest, and the priest said, you drink too much. And I said, I know that. He said, why do you drink? And I told him something, and anybody in this room that's an alcoholic, when I tell it to you, you're going to thoroughly understand it. And if you're not an alcoholic, you're going to get that look. You know, your lips get real blue and thin, and you get kind of squinty, and you know, haven't you had enough fun for one night? You know, that kind of look. And here's what I said. I said, Father, this is a lousy, stinking world, and I never asked to be put into it. And the only thing that gives me joy is alcohol. You want me to give up the one thing that gives me joy? And he got that look. Well, obviously, a bottle of pop-off did not do for him what it did for me. I didn't know anything about alcoholism when I was drinking, and I knew absolutely nothing about recovery from alcohol till I got here. And everything that I know, I heard from you people. And so if you hear anything that was stolen from anybody, I stole it from them. The only thing that I know about alcoholism is that if I drink, I black out, and when I wake up, I puke a lot. That's all I know. So everything I know about the recovery of AA, I learned from you people. Now, I didn't catch the disease, and I didn't catch the recovery. There were certain things I had to do in order to qualify to come here, and there's certain things that I've had to do in order to stay here. Now, there's an awful lot of speakers that will tell you they never found it necessary to take a drink. I found it necessary to take a drink a whole lot of times. I just never done it. And I've never done it because I can't drink alcohol. If there's anything that pisses off a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's to find an alcoholic that can still drink. And they go out and they get drunk, and they get drunk, and why did he do it? He did it because he can still drink. If I could still drink, you'd have a different speaker tonight. Now, I don't know about you, but let me, if I can, explain to you what alcohol does to me. I take a cold half a pint of anything, and I crack the lid, and I take half of it, and I swallow it, and it goes down into my stomach, and it explodes. And all of a sudden, there's a voice, and the voice says, hi, helps on the way, and everything's okay. God, those kids are great. I love those. I want to have more kids. And Quasimodo, she's wonderful. God, I love her. And her mother, bring mother over. Mother, come over. Spend a weekend. And that job, I love that job. I love it. I can't wait to go down there again. Oh, God, it's wonderful. And you start out drinking it, and you get a half a pint, and you drink it, and it lasts all night. It's wonderful. You go into a bar, and you're tired, and you're wore out. And that wife's got you beat to death, and those bills have got you beat to death, and those kids are driving you out of your mind. And that old junk car you're driving keeps breaking down. And that boss, you hate him. And you have a couple of scooters with a couple of shots back, and you look over, and there she is. And he wanted me to give that up. Stupid. Stupid. I fly on airplanes a lot. I watch normal people drink. I watch them drink. There was a deal around AA a long time ago, and they said if they had a pill and you could take it so you could drink like a normal person, would you take it? Hell yes, I'd take it. Till I found out what a normal person... Let me tell you what a normal person drinks like. I've got the show in Phoenix, and I'm flying back to Phoenix on the airplane. And there's this yo-yo sitting next to me with a $1,500 suit and a Rolex watch. And he's a mover and a shaker. He's got a flip phone, and you can tell this guy can do it. He gets on the plane, and he says, "Ah, God, I've had a day. When's she going to be here with the cocktails?" So the little stewardess comes by, and he says, "I want 3 shots. And she says, "Sir," she said, "I can only sell you 2. And he makes a big deal out of wanting 3. Well, I'm sitting next to him, and I figure, here's me. So I bought him one, gave it to him. I mean, you know, if you want 3 shots, you know. And he gets this glass, and he gets some ice cubes in it, and he pours all them 3 shots in, and then he just takes a little whisper of 7-Up now. But this is my kind of guy. I love him. And then he starts doing that thing normal people do. He starts stirring the drink. Stirs it. And then he calls the girl over, and the girl comes over and he says, "Have you got any more peanuts?" The dumb bastard hasn't even drank it yet. He wants to eat now. I don't have to tell you. You know what goes on. It takes 45 minutes to fly from Phoenix to Las Vegas. Probably another 15 minutes to take off and land. It took him 5 minutes to get the drink. And 45 minutes later, finally the girl comes and says, "Look, you either drink it or I got to pick it up." And then you know what the jerk says? He says, "Well, I better not. I've got my car at the airport. I'm going to drive home." Folks, I never did that. When I was 12 years old, I never did that. Never. It's a disgrace. They shouldn't allow people like that to drink. There's all kinds of out. The American Medical Association says that 1 out of every 10 people that drink is an alcoholic. So if we're all alcoholics in this room, or if 90% of us are alcoholics, we're 1 out of 10. Now, I got a magic show. Are there any other magicians in the room that have a magic show? Okay, I'm the 1 out of 10 magicians that drank and became an alcoholic. There's a guy down here that's a waiter. Now, he's a 1 out of 10 waiter. And there's another lady that's a secretary. And we're all kinds of people from all walks of life that have nothing in common except 2 things. We all understand what fear is. And we all have an unmanageable life. And until we came here, we all had a solution. You see, alcohol was my solution. It was their problem. You know, my wife kept telling me how sick I was. Hell, she lived with me. At least I had the decency to drink. So we come together in these rooms from all walks of life, from all backgrounds, from all religions, and we have 2 things in common. We know what fear is, and we have an unmanageable life. And we walk into this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, and we say, "Fix me." And we don't even know what it is. The first meeting I went to, I knew there had to be a scam. There's nothing free in this world, folks. I know that. There's a scam. And this room that I went into, it was exactly what an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting ought to look like. The average age was about 109. The woman that led the meeting had a face like a chewed boot. I'm 29 years old. There's one guy gets up and he says, "Well, you know, I was in jail for 37 years, and you understood why. He's supposed to be in jail." And I'm sitting in the back of the room. I'm drunker than a hoot owl. You come to your first AA meeting, you come drunk. Only way to go. I got a bottle stashed out in the weeds. I run out, have a little taste. I'm sitting back there in the back row. The back row is where I always sat because that's where I can always critique, the back row. And I'd listen to the speaker, and I'd have a little drink, and the strangest thing happened. The woman called on me to talk. So I'm drunk, and I get up, and I come up behind the podium, and I did something I'd never done before in my life. I said, "My name's John, and I don't know whether I'm an alcoholic or not, but I said, every time I drink, I go to sleep, and I wake up, and I don't know I'm awake. And I get up, and I go out, and I pee over at the geraniums." They just did what they giggled. Now, folks, when I was doing that, my wife was not giggling. That was not funny. I stood there behind that podium, and for the first time in my life, you people didn't stand in judgment on me. And I was drunk, and they say you can't talk to a drunk. Well, you talked to me when I was drunk, and I knew what you were talking about. And I met a man at this meeting, and he was everything in a human being I hate. He was a Baptist. I was skinny when I got here. He's a great big fat man, weighs about 300 pounds, and he's one of these finger guys. You know that sun stuff? God, I hate them people. And he starts tattooing on my, he got me up in a corner. I'm drunk. I've run out of everything. I'm 29 years old. I'm bankrupt in every area of my life. I'm dying from the disease of alcoholism, and I don't know it. I still think it's her. And he gave me information I never had before in my life. He said, look, he said, if you're like I am, he says, you suffer from the disease of alcoholism. He said, it's a twofold disease. It's an allergy of the body that's coupled with an obsession of the mind. And he says, the disease of alcoholism is like taking a train from here to downtown Los Angeles. You can ride it all the way down to the end of the line, get out and lay some more track, or you can get off anytime you want. He says, not your choice. He says, you need some help? Call me. Here's my phone number. He left. But he planted it up here. He gave it to me up here. I got the information. Now understand, alcohol's not my problem. But for the first time in my life, somebody gave me a reason that I could sit down so I could figure out what's wrong with me. I don't know how you people are, but if I walked out of here tonight and a guy, a green man, tapped me on the shoulder and said, John, the spaceship is across the street. I'm going to take you back to your planet where you really belong. My life would make perfectly good sense. I don't belong here. I have never belonged here. I don't have the same thinking process as they do. I figured out a few years ago I'm probably made out of spare parts. My soul and my mind, they're at war with one another. You know, I got Charles Manson up here sitting around the table making my big decisions for me. Well, I went to this meeting and I got some information. And they said, buy a book. And I thought, bingo, that's it. That's the scam. They're selling books. They gave me a book. But then they passed the basket. Now, I knew for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous why they passed that basket. And in case you're new, I'll tell you why we passed the basket. All of these meetings have secretaries, and the purpose for passing a basket is so you give him the money and he steals it and he finds out he's a thief. No offense. No offense. But I didn't, I knew there was something going on here. I knew there was something going on. I got the book and I read it and I didn't understand it. Bill Wilson's story was not my story. I had nothing in common with him. He was an old man. He was in the First World War. Hell, this is Korean War times. I'm 29 years old. I'm hip, slick, and cool, and I look great. That was one of my problems. I got up in the morning. I looked at myself in the mirror. It looked okay to me. I went out and bumped in the world all day long. I'm looking at the outside, and the inside's totally, it can't function. The inside runs on alcohol and drugs. That's what it runs on. But I read the book, and it came to the part of the book about controlled drinking. Boy, isn't that great. Wow. So I go out, and I get another job, and I start my life over again. Now, I had a whole lot of jobs the last 2 years that I drank. It's kind of tough filling out that application when the nosy people want to know where you've been for the last 5 years. So let me give you a hint. If you go on another, I hope you don't, but if you decide to go on another drunk and you got to get another job, tell them your wife is an alcoholic and she moves around the country and you got to keep moving around following her. It works. Sometimes they'll even hire you. They one job, they paid me more money because I was trying to help my wife out. Well, I read this book, I hear about controlled drinking, I go out and I get another job, and I decide that I'm not an alcoholic because I've never been seriously arrested. Seriously arrested. I've never had a 502 DWI. Never had one of those. Never. I destroyed 3 cars while drunk. But I never had one of those. I'd never been in an insane asylum for very long. I had a nervous disorder. I'm a pathological liar, and I'm not a pathological. I got a great imagination. I want to be Indiana Jones, and I can be Indiana Jones. You give me a half a pint, and I'm Indy. In fact, you give me a real bad, depressed day, and let me go hide in the dark for a while, I can be Indy. You give me a half a pint, and I slip off into a world that doesn't exist, a world that's comfortable, and a world that I can live in. Forgot where I was at. I don't have Alzheimer's, but I got all the symptoms. So I'll get caught up in a moment. I went to this meeting. I tried controlled drinking. I got another job. At my job, every day when I got off of work, I'd go down and have one draft beer. And I drink half of it. I get up and leave. I did it for 2 weeks. If you can do that for 2 weeks, you haven't got a drinking problem. I got my paycheck. I asked my boss, Joe, I said, where do you get it cashed? He says, you take it down to the bar. They cash it. They cash my check. They hand me a pitcher of beer. Bingo, without even thinking about it, I drank the pitcher of beer. It's set up in me what I've come to learn out since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, the phenomenon of craving. The reason why that I could never have one drink is because I can't have one drink. And I can't eat one cashew nut either. But see, I never went to the trouble that I went to over cashew nuts. I start out on my last drunk. I end up in Las Vegas, Nevada. I end up in room 1014 of the Fremont Hotel. I end up 30 years old, and I end up at the end of my rope. Now, I had always had a little bargain with myself all my life that if life got bad enough, I'd kill myself. And it got bad enough. And I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to get drunk enough, and I'm going to jump out the window. I spent 2 weeks on this drunk, and the only reason why I spent 2 weeks on the drunk is 2 weeks was as long as I could hold up. 2 weeks, I'm back in Santa Monica Hospital. This was before treatment centers. They put you down in the psycho ward. They load you full of something. You come off. They feed you intravenously. They get you well. They say you shouldn't do that anymore. They turn you loose, and you get a drink on the way home. At the end of the two-week drunk, I tried to jump out the window, and I could not go out that window. Couldn't do it. If there's any way that I could have gone out that window, I'd have been gone. Couldn't do it. I couldn't pass out and fall out. I couldn't jump out. I looked down on the street, and I saw all of these people running around, and something occurred to me in my mind that those people had something to live for, and I had nothing to live for. And my life was over. And something happened to me in that room, because what happened to me in that room is for the first time in my life, the fear was removed. I had DTs, I guess. I don't know. But the fear was removed. And when I woke up, I laid in bed, and I knew what my problem was. I knew it was alcohol. And I was trapped in the dilemma of the alcoholic. I can no longer successfully drink, and I can't live without it. And I can't die. What do you do? Well, I'll tell you what I did. I rolled over in the bed, and I'd been laying in this bed for 2 weeks, and the stench of my own body cut my nostrils and just, you know what I'm talking about. And I poured another drink, and I looked at that glass, and I said, this is the last drink of alcohol I'll ever take. And I drank it, and I rolled out of bed, and I was so sick I couldn't move. And I got down on my hands and knees, and I said, God, help me. And he did. And I didn't even believe in him. That was the 7th of May, 1965. Now, that was 27 years ago. Now, the question is, how does a 30-year-old misfit that's made out of spare parts, that drank every day of his life, stay sober for 27 years? If I could take any credit for it, I'd take it, folks. The biggest problem I got in my life is ego. That's my biggest problem. Yeah, I got an ego the size of the state of Texas. And if I could take credit for it, I would write the definitive book on alcoholism. I'd get two or three real cute girls. We'd go on a lecture tour. I would sell the book for $29.95. I would kick back 10 bucks to whoever let me do the lecture, and I would be a multimillionaire. But I can't do it, because I'm sober today because of you people, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a God that I've never understood. And it's just that simple. My friends in the room that know me have heard this story to death, but God, it's the story of AA. It's a story, my story of AA. I was married to a little girl in Alcoholics Anonymous, and She was from Texas, and she was a little bitty thing, and she was cute as she could be, and she needed me, and that's what's very necessary in my relationship. Gotta need me. And I was a circuit speaker, and she was the warm-up, and I was sober 5 years, and we were asked to speak at a rather prestigious meeting in San Francisco, and I went down and I got a black tail coat, and we went to this meeting, and there was probably 500 people, and we had a big banquet, and they got me up, and they said, "Now look, here's the way we do this." They had a podium, and they had a shield up on it, and they had two lights. And over here they had a yellow light, over here they had a red light. You couldn't see it, the speakers could. They said, "We do the banquet, we do an hour and a half meeting, first speaker speaks 15 minutes, second speaker 45 minutes, yellow light comes on, you got 5 minutes, red light, it's over, the fat lady sings." And I had a talk. I'm telling you, I had a talk. Oh God, it was great. It was just the neatest talk. I've been practicing for weeks. I knew exactly what I was going to say. It was one of these kind of talks where at the end I cried. If you've ever been to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, circuit speakers cry. Oh, it's wonderful. And you cry with them. Now, if you're new, let me tell you the difference between an AA speaker and a circuit speaker. Circuit speakers get well. I will never get well. You'll notice as my recovery comes, I get older and sicker, both at the same time. Well, we got to this meeting, and I'm special. They've asked me to speak. They want me to share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm special. Now, I got an ego. I got a real bad ego problem. Well, this little girl I married to, her name is Judy, and she would go to the room, and she gets down on her knees by the bed, and she asks God to give her the strength to say the right thing at that meeting. And I thought to myself, isn't that nice? I used to do that. And I got the strength to say that. I now have the right to. I say the right things now. And I left. Came time for the banquet. We had the dinner. We ate. Everybody got through eating. They started the meeting out. They said, "For our first speaker, we have Judy Teeth from Santa Monica." And the speakers were sitting behind the podium, see. And I'm sitting back here, and this little girl got up, and she's shaking. She's holding on to the podium, and her knees are, you know, she's shaking. And she can't talk. And she says, "Hi." She was from Texas. "Hi." "See, my name's Judy, and I'm an alcoholic." And she turns around, and she looks at me, and all the blood's gone out of her face. She's pale. You know? And she turns around, and she looks at the people, and, you know, there's a big group out there. She says, "I don't know what to say." And she stops. And you know, when you're up behind this podium, you stop. 20 seconds is an eternity. And she takes a great, big, deep breath. And 45 minutes later, she's still talking. If there was any way I could have killed this broad, I'd have killed her. She's supposed to speak 15 minutes. I'm the 45-minute speaker, damn it. My talk keeps getting shorter and shorter. I know my sponsor's right. I never should have married the broad to begin with. If I could have prayed her to death, she'd have died on that podium. I hated her. And finally, after she's gone on for about 45, they've turned the goddamn lights off. They've given up on the lights. All of a sudden, she realized what she's done, and she's shocked like they poured water on her. And she got real small, real small. She said, "I'm sorry." She said, "I'm just so glad that I'm alive. I want to share it with you." And she sat down. Now, folks, I knew what was going to happen. I knew what was going to happen. I knew they were going to have the little meeting, and they were going to come to me and say, "Now, look, John, you've come all the way down here from Los Angeles, and we know you're a good speaker, and we're going to give you about 35 minutes. Will that be all right?" I knew that. So they had their little meeting. They did the traditions thing, and they had a little coffee break, and then they had their meeting, and I heard them talking, and I knew what, you know, and I was, well, that'll be fine. 35 minutes will do it. And the guy, the lady was reading the meeting, came up to me, and she said, "John, you've got 5 minutes." So, they said, "For our main speaker tonight, we have John T. from Santa Monica." I stood up, and sometimes, in stressful times, great things happen. I said, my name's John Todman. I'm an alcoholic. I used to drink. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't drink anymore. And I sat down. And 750 people stood up. They thought it was great. Now, folks, I paid for two carloads full of people to drive from Santa Monica to San Francisco to listen to me, speak. I carried them around with me. That's the reason why you sponsor people. You drag them into this crap. Let them listen to it. People came up to me and shook my hand and said, John, that's the best talk you ever gave. And it was, because that's the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to drink. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't drink anymore. That's it. That's all there is. Now, if you're going to join up with us, you need to know a little bit about us. And I'm not going to bore you with the story of Alcoholics Anonymous. But if you're like I am, and you've said all your life, if there's a God, shoot a little beam of light down here. Give me a sign, and I'll go for it. If you're that kind of a person, I'm going to take 5 minutes of your life, and I'm going to tell you about a miracle. Don't look at the clock. I lie. The year I was born, 58 years ago, there was a drunken stockbroker. And if he were alive today, he would be selling aluminum siding or he would be soliciting on the telephone, selling vitamins. And he's dying from the disease of alcoholism. And he's gone to Towns Hospital three times and he's hopeless. And there's a little doctor that was working for 50 bucks a month that was working at the scuzziest job in the whole world. He's working with alcoholics. See, there didn't used to be money in alcoholic treatment. See, people like me don't pay their bills. We go to hospitals, we run up the bill, we say, screw you, Charlie, I ain't going to pay for it. And this little man is stuck working for these bunch of drunks, and it's a terrible job, but he loves them, and he watches them. And this little man comes up with a piece of information. He finds out through observation that he believes that the alcoholic is different in mind and body than the rest of the people. And he believes that the alcoholic has what he calls the phenomenon of craving. New stuff. It's like now if they found out what cancer was and how to cure it. And this little obscure doctor tells this drunken stockbroker what he knows about alcoholism. Piece of the puzzle. And the guy goes home and he goes back to doing what he's doing, knowing how to drink, and he runs across another guy, an old drinking buddy. He calls him up and says, I want to come talk to you, but you want to see a drinking buddy. And this drinking buddy's name was Ebby, and he talked to a guy named Roland who went all the way to Europe to talk to the greatest mind of his time, the greatest psychiatrist of the day. And they found out another little piece of a puzzle. They found out that every once in a while, people like me, alcoholics, get sober and they never drink again. And they do it because they have what they call a spiritual experience. Not a piece of the puzzle. Ebby gives this information to this drunken stockbroker. Now he's found out the nature of his illness and what he has to do to get over it. And he goes down and he joins up with a bunch of hallelujah folks called the Oxford Group. And they're good Jesus people. Oh, God, they love Jesus. And there's nothing wrong with loving Jesus. If Jesus would get you sober, go get sober. He's trying to have one of these spiritual experiences. And he finds out that one of the things he's got to do is work with another alcoholic. I'm self-centered. I don't want to work with anybody. You can work with me, but I don't want to work with anybody. Three pieces of the puzzle. The nature of the disease, what he has to do to get over it, and he's got to work with other alcoholics. My life today depends upon what an Al-Anon said. And if you're new in AA and you don't know who Al-Anon is, it's the enemy. It's the women that lived with us that we drove out of their minds. I'm alive today because of an Al-Anon. Bill Wilson worked with drunks. He said, this isn't working. His wife says, I know, nobody's staying sober. But Bill, this is the longest period of time you've ever been sober in your life. I resign from AA. I get enough of this crap. You know what my wife tells me? John, it's the longest period of time. Everybody, okay, I got the message. Third piece of the puzzle. He's found out what he has to do. He meets a proctologist. That's an asshole doctor. A drunken one. Folks, the first 12-step call that was ever made, the doctor never called Bill. Bill's dying, and he knows it. And he says, I've got to find another drunk to talk to. The doctor says, I'll give you 15 minutes. And he talks to him. And he tells him what he's... The three pieces... He tells him what he's found out. The proctologist happens to be a member of this Jesus group, too. He's trying to find God to get him sober. He had looked for God to get him sober for years. God never did it. Now he's got new information. That doctor drank again. You know what his sponsor did, Bill Wilson, when he got drunk? He bought him a beer. That's what he did. That was June the 10th, 1935. The fellowship was born. The fellowship was not born when Bill Wilson got sober. The fellowship was born when one alcoholic gave it to another one. See, the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous isn't that I've been sober 27 years. You've got to take my word for it, whether I'm an alcoholic. You don't really know. Maybe I'm some kind of a kook comes around here to pick girls up. The miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous is if you're like I am, you listen to me, you do what I tell you to do, you'll never take another drink again as long as you live. Period. I guarantee it. Two guys, 1935. There's 4 million of us today. 4 million. It's been carried one person to another person to another. We don't do this in groups. We do this on a one-on-one basis. Now, if it'll work for 4 million people, it'll work for you. See, the reason why I'm here tonight is to tell you that you don't have to die from alcoholism. The reason why I'm here tonight is to tell you I don't care who you are. I don't care how much money you have, or I don't care how great you are. I don't care whether you're the president of MGM. I don't care whether you're a skid row wino. If you suffer from the disease of alcoholism, if you have an allergy of the body that's coupled with an obsession of the mind, if after you induce alcohol into your system, you have to drink, we got a way out. When Bill Wilson wrote this book, he wanted to change the name from Alcoholics Anonymous to The Way Out. You know, that's a damn good name because it is the way out. It is the way out. Let me tell you just a little bit about this fellowship. We're all equal. Nobody's in charge. You can't find anybody in charge of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, you can't find them. I sobered up down in California. We weren't too far from UCLA. And they'd send government students down to examine us. And they wanted to know how we worked. You know how we worked? Two or three are gathered. We're there. We stole that one out of the Bible, didn't we, huh? Two of us are there. Who's in charge? I don't know. I've been sober 27 years. I got a buddy of mine sitting over here, got a month and a half. You know the difference between he and I? Nothing. Well, there is a difference, a very slight difference. And it's another five-minute story. If I got a stain on my sweater, and if you're going to hear it, you got no choice. You can leave. That's it. I know you're a sponsor. You can't leave. If I got a mustard stain on my sweater, it would upset me. I don't like mustard stains on my clothes. And if I ran across Kathy, and Kathy said, I'll tell you what you do. You go down to the store, you get some Oxydol, you put it in Oxydol, it'll wash it. Let me tell you how my mind works. What the hell does she know? This is my sweater. This is my mustard stain. It's an expensive sweater. I spend a lot of money. I'm going to have it dry clean. Here, let me get some water. I screw around with it, and I try and fix it myself, and nothing works. Finally, out of desperation, I go down to the store. I buy some Oxydol. I follow directions. I put it in the washing machine. I take it out. The mustard stain's gone. Now, when Kathy told me about what I had to do with this, I had to take what she told me on faith. I didn't know it worked. I took it on faith when I bought it. I took it on faith when I put it in the washing machine. I took it on faith when I turned the water. When I pulled the sweater out of the washing machine, it was no longer faith. It was now fact. Now, the only difference between me and the guy that got a 30-day chip is I know that Oxydol takes the stain out. I know it works. It's done it for me for 27 years. If there was anything in my life that could happen that's so great that I would have got drunk, I'd have been drunk years ago. I've been married, I've been divorced, I've been rich, I've been poor, I've been unemployed, I've had a lot of money, I haven't had any money at all. I had my wife and girlfriend both pregnant at the same time. Now, that's not behavior of someone from the First Baptist Church. The point I'm trying to make is, I'm not a saint. I'm a drunk, and I don't drink anymore, and I figured out a way to stay alive because you people told me how to do it. This thing is so simple. There's two people on this program that have an easy time, brand new people, and people have been around for a long time. If you're sober, you remember the first week or so when you woke up and you didn't come out of a blackout. You remember the luxury? You remember the luxury of waking up and knowing your bed's going to be dry? God, we were grateful. And then we get a little sober. And now we got problems. Now, you've been around here forever. You go back to the simple party. We got to keep this thing simple. We got to keep it simple. Don't complicate it. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I surrendered to the disease of alcohol. And with all honesty, the first 5 years I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought something to be true. I thought that the steps were great for some people that really needed it. But I thought because of my Catholic background, I knew a little bit about God, and I didn't really need to do all of the things that you people needed to do. And I got pushed up against the wall. And my wife was going to leave me. And the fear came back. And I knew I had to drink. And God intervened in my life again. And with my insane, sick mind, I grew up in Santa Monica. There's 19 stoplights from Bundy down to the beach. I got a gun. I got in a car. I said, God, if you want me to end it, turn the light red. I'll blow my brains out. I can't live sober either. I drove all the way to the beach, and the lights never turned red. I've lived there all my life. You can't do that. But in some way or another, I think God was... It's interesting. God's helped me in my life when I've run out. When I do all I can do, that's when He kicks in and He helps me. And I sat down at the beach, and I knew that I'd been sober too long to be the way I was. You know, I had a friend of mine in Alcoholics Anonymous that took his life with 10 years of sobriety because he wasn't doing better than he was supposed to do. And folks, I'm telling you, the best you're ever going to get is sober. But if you've been wet in your bed for the last few years, sober's real good. And I sit down at that beach, and I thought about what was wrong with me, and I knew this thing wouldn't work. And I went back, and I turned myself into some people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they told me about the dis-ease of alcoholism. They told me the reason why you drank yourself to death is you couldn't stand yourself sober. I don't know how you are. I can meet anybody in this room. We can stand outside. You can tell me you've done anything. I'll forgive you. I've always been like that. As long as you didn't do it to me, I don't care. I'll forgive you for anything. You know, I can't forgive me for not being the kind of father that I thought I should have been. I can't forgive me for that. I can't forgive myself. I forgive you, I can't forgive myself. Well, at 5 years of sobriety, I found out something. I found out it was time for me to go to work and work these steps. And the good news that I bring you tonight is that if you will work these steps, whether you're 1 week sober, or whether you're 5 years sober, or whether you're 25 years sober, something's going to happen. Now, if I had the book here, I'd read it to you because they put it in the book better than I could. But let me tell you what happens. You get happy, joyous, and free. And I don't know how you are, but I figured out that if God wanted me to go live in Tibet in a shack and sleep on the ground, if He'd make me happy, joyous, and free, I'd go do it. And I did it, and it worked instantaneously. It took me 5 years on the program sober to figure out that my life was unmanageable. See, I thought my life was unmanageable while I was drunk. And in 5 years of being sober, I realized that I was powerless over alcohol, that my life was unmanageable, and it was going to take a miracle to cure me. I got somebody I'm working with, and we were talking today, and this person said, well, I thought you just did these 12 steps once and you were fixed. And that's what I thought when I got here. You do the 12 steps once, and you strip off a little veneer. And you think, whew, God, it feels good. I'm free. Until you strip off the next one, and you strip off the next one, and you strip off the next one. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous works every time. It's never failed. I was sitting in an AA meeting about 5 years ago, and there was a young lady who was in a whole lot of trouble. And she was a beautiful young lady. And people run away from pretty young ladies. They scare them. And she's going to die. Her life fell apart. She's got 5 years. She didn't have a street that she drove down, but her life came apart. She says, this program doesn't work. I was sober 20 years at the time. This was 7 years ago. 20 years. I found out something I didn't know. I want to share it with you. I said, if you do this, it'll work. She said, no, it won't. I said, yes, it will. She said, okay, I'll make you a deal. I'll do it. If it doesn't work, I'm going to kill myself, but before I do, I'm going to blow your brains out. Now, does it work? I'm made out of spare parts, and my thinking process really isn't too good. There's some days that I know the only reason they're running megabucks up is so God will let me win it, and I'm not even a gambler. You know, I lose 20 bucks, it just kills me. So I start thinking about what this girl told me, and I came up with a solution, folks. If anybody in this room has a problem that this program won't fix, I wish to God you would shoot me. Because when I get it, I'm going to have to go back and drink again, and I can't go back to where I came from. I can't go back there. And so poor, stupid John, I said, yeah, hell, I'll do it. And my friends are starting to move away from me. They don't want to get caught in a crossfire. She said, I'm going to let you teach me the steps. So I start out doing exactly what my sponsor did with me 20 years before. Doing exactly what his sponsor did with him. Doing exactly what the proctologist and the stockbroker did the year I was born. Talk about a process that takes you from point A to point B. A process that takes you to the point that God can and will. First step didn't work. Second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. It didn't work. She's getting worse. Eighth step, she bought a gun. Ninth step, I'm thinking about leaving town. My wife is not one of us. And the only thing that girl ever did wrong in her life was marry me. I don't know why she did it. She said, she's going to kill you. And I said something. I said, okay. I said, I'd rather die carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous than that shit I used to do. And I used to have to carry a gun to protect myself from those people. Well, you know what happened? I'm here. I'm alive. She worked the ninth step, and it happened. It happened. It happened. My 25th AA birthday, I got a bottle of Jim Beam and five bullets came out of her gun. The bottle she bought, it works. That's the story. I don't care how bad you are, it works. And if you need some crazy fool to tell you, do it, it won't work, blow my brains out, there's a deal, go do it. Now, I'm not going to tell you by sitting on your butt in an AA meeting you're going to get this stuff. You won't get it. You got to get into that book, and you got to do what that book tells you to do. And if you'll do it, and if you're crazy, and if you're scared, and if you're an alcoholic, you're going to get happy, joyous, and free. It happened for me. And it happened for 4 million people. See, my disease is I'm different. I've never yet ever had anybody come to me and say, John, will you teach me about this program? Because I'm just like you are. We're all different. We got the different disease. We got a couple of other things in common beside the unmanageable life and the pain. There's certain words I don't know what they mean. One of them is enough. I don't know what enough is. I never had enough of anything. Moore. My name is John Moore Todman. And then the other thing about me that's different than any other human being in this room is, you see, I've never been loved enough. If I could just find somebody that loved me enough. I've had people love me till I broke their hearts. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous I found out many secrets. Well, they're not secrets because they're free, but when I didn't know them, they were secrets. And I found out how to fill up these holes inside me. Now, I'm going to tell you, and it ain't going to work for you by just knowing it. See, Alcoholics Anonymous isn't something that you can intellectually learn. Alcoholics Anonymous is something you got to do. So by me telling you, you having the knowledge, you won't be the miracle till you do it. I never fit. Never in my life. When I drank, when I got that explosion inside me, for that period of time I fit. But you see, that period of time kept getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And the last year that I drank, I'm getting 5 minutes. And God, I'm paying a price for it. The last drunk I went on, I didn't get any. In fact, it was worse. It was worse. I got a whole lot of stuff I want to say, and I'm running out of time. You come into this program, you find somebody that's been through this process. I'll tell you what I did. You find somebody that you can't con. And you walk up to them and you say, I'm dying from the disease of alcoholism. Will you show me a way out? And then you do what they tell you to do. Hardest thing in the world to do. When I surrendered to the disease of alcoholism, my sponsor said, are you willing to go at any length? I said, yes. He said, will you do whatever I tell you to do? He said, yes. He said, take off your clothes. You know how humiliating it is for a man to take his clothes off? When they interrogate prisoners, if they can get men to, they strip them down. I stood on an open shop in Wilshire Boulevard and I got down to my shorts. He said, okay, put them back on. You have to be willing to go to England. You don't have to go, but you got to be willing to go. I talked too long. I'm going to take just a minute or two more. I'm glad you're here. The people that got 30-day chips, God, I'm glad you're here. The people that got 6-month chips, you started on the greatest adventure of your life. This is the greatest adventure of your life. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, the person I hated more than anybody was me. And I met the most interesting human being I've ever known, me. The guy I was trying to kill is the neatest guy I ever knew. And when you get here, you're going to get to know him or her. You're going to build friendships in this program that are indescribably wonderful. You're going to have love affairs on this program. What you're going to have is just, it's unbelievable. And it's free. It doesn't cost you anything. Most exclusive club in the world, Alcoholics Anonymous. The price we paid to come in here is unbelievable. One story. The only reference that I have to God is the Bible. Christian version of God. I was raised a Christian, so that's my reference book. I don't know whether it's true or not. I found God in the eyes of an alcoholic. That's where I found God. In Alcoholics Anonymous. But let's just say that it's true. And they tell a story in that book about a Nazarene. And he was a miracle worker. And he was man and he was God. And he traveled around the country and he did miracles. And there's a guy and he's dying. And his family doesn't want him to die because they love him. And his children love him. And they send out to get this Nazarene. And by the time they get him back, the guy died. And the family stands around and says, is there anything you can do? They said he was God. So he walked in the tomb. He laid hands on the body. And a dead man came back to life. And he walked out of the tomb. Guy's name was Lazarus. You've all heard the story. Going on the assumption the story is true. When Lazarus walked out of that tomb, there's only one thing he could do. He could tell what the carpenter did for him. That's all he could do. He could talk about the carpenter. He could follow the carpenter around. He could listen to him. And he could see what the guy had to tell him. A guy walked into my tomb and I was dead. He didn't lay hands on me. He laid words on me. And they were written down in a book. And I came back to life. And I walked out of that tomb. I've got those words. Those words were written down in 1935. I've got them, and they work. I have the ability to give you those words. You know, I told you about this love disorder, this feeling. Let me tell you what fills up the hole. When I give you the words and this power, whatever it is, comes through me to you and the miracle happens in your life, I'm filled up. It's okay for me to be me. All my life I wanted a love affair and I found it. Only it's with God and it's with you people. I don't ever have to take another drink again as long as I live. I prostituted myself in every area of my life. I've done it all. Anybody wants to swap fifth steps, I'll swap them with you. I've gone a lot of places and done a lot of things just to make me feel good. And I found out that when I can sit down and take the hand of another drunk that's dying, and giving these words, give her these words, give it these words. And the healing factor works through me to them. There's a reason why I'm alive. And there's a reason why you're alive. If you think that God saved you just so you can go out there and make a lot of money, you're wrong. God saved you so you can take those words and you can pass them on to another human being. Big Bird won't let me talk over an hour. He walked in the back of the room, he looked at his watch, and I guess I've said enough. I want to thank you for being here tonight. I want to thank you for my life. You see, there's ghosts in this room that we don't know. There's a ghost of Andy Stone, the man that carried the word to my sponsor. There's the ghost of Dick Trotter. Dick stayed sober for 17 years and he quit living by these principles. And he drank again and he died. And there's the ghost of thousands of alcoholics that came together to give us what we have. You've got it here. For God's sakes, don't turn your back on it. For God's sakes, take this thing. Grab us in one hand. Grab God with the other hand. Let's stay alive. Let's find out what life's all about. I want to thank for asking me to talk. Thank you. Appreciate it. I want to thank you for being here, and I want to tell you that my name is John Todman. I am an alcoholic, and I used to drink. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't drink anymore. God bless you.